Again, at night, as I recite the Lotus Sutra, the sound moves the galaxies. The earth below wakes up. In her lap, suddenly flowers appear. At night, as I recite the Lotus Sutra, a jeweled stupa appears resplendent. All over the sky, bodhisattvas are seen, and the Buddhist hand is in mine. So that's from Thich Nhat Hanh's book called Opening the Heart of the Cosmos, Insights on the Lotus Sutra. So one of the things I've noticed about myself is that I've been giving, had wonderful opportunities to give some talks and teach some classes. And at each, the beginning of each one, I talk about how this 2 weeks of being in shelter in place is really an opportunity for us to think about and notice what's going on for us, et cetera. And finally, somebody over the weekend said to me, it's been 30 days, not 2 weeks. So I said, So I think it was partially not that I was completely delusional, but that I think something in my brain said I can manage 2 weeks, but it gets to be 30 days or 60 days. That's a whole nother thing. But one of the ways that I've been spending some of the time is going back and looking at some of the Buddhist teachings that have been important to me over the years or have been challenging to me or frankly have sometimes completely stumped me. And the Lotus Sutra is one of those. It, like many sutras that we read about in Buddhism, you can find commentaries that say that it is arguably the most famous of all Buddhist texts. And you will, of course, find that said about many Buddhist texts. But what I like about this, and Gene Reeves' book about this sutra, he calls it a radical revision of both the Buddhist path and the person of the Buddha. And so very influential in the Mahayana school of Buddhism. It's particularly meaningful for me and hopefully for you as we're in this period of 2020 that we're in, because this sutra, when you really get a chance to read it, is a teaching that encourages active engagement with the mundane things of life and also with all of life's challenges. So Buddhahood, it's taught in the Lotus Sutra, is not an escape from the challenges, but an inexhaustible source of positive energy to grapple with and transform the suffering and contradictions of life. And so the Lotus Sutra gives us these wonderful opportunities to think about how we face life exactly as it is and how we move through that. And so, you know, it's a really powerful, wonderful teaching, it seems to me. So I don't know if any of you read it. We won't ask for a show of hands because the next show of hands would have to be who understood it the first time they read it. And so I'll just tell you my experience was that I've read it a few times, mostly in practice periods in classes. And the first several times that I read through it, I thought it's long, it's repetitive, it's very dramatic, has a lot of mystical elements, which didn't at that time appeal to me at all. And then I thought, you know, it's just primarily so repetitive. They keep saying the same things over and over and over again. And so I sort of had a little difficulty with it in the beginning. And then as I read it more, I thought, it's mystical and it's colorful and it has lots of beautiful language in it. And maybe if I just get rid of my resistance and read it with an appreciation for the writing and the words, an appreciation for all of the imagery that it brings up, that I might have an experience like the one that Thich Nhat Hanh described in that poem. All over the sky, the bodhisattvas appear, which means we're all in this together, and the Buddha's hand is in mine, which means I'm safe and can thrive as long as I remember that we are indeed all in this together, and that each of us, as the Lotus Sutra says, has full Buddha nature capacity. So hand in hand, we are safe. And so when I managed to go back and look at and appreciate this sutra for those reasons, I was able to have a whole different experience. And now I read it from time to time, sometimes because it's just beautiful. The language in it is beautiful and it conjures up all these images of flowers and stars in the sky and large groups of people coming together, sometimes purely generated out of the earth, to listen to the Buddha's teachings. And all of that is a wonderful way that that gives us the opportunity to say, well, why would they write it that way with so many stories and parables and so much colorfulness and so much mystical realism? And the reason is that one of the important teachings here is about what they refer to as skillful means. And so what that means in this context is teaching in a way that allows whoever it is that we're talking to understand and have access to the Buddha and the teachings of the Buddha. And so what you get a beautiful example of in the Lotus Sutra is several key points being made over and over again through direct commentary, through parables, through stories. And it's just beautiful. If you haven't read it or haven't read it in a while, I really encourage you, particularly during these 2 weeks that we're locked in place, to go spend some time having a look at it. So, you know, like many sutras, there is some controversy. That one of the controversies is about who actually wrote it. And as we all know, the Buddha actually probably didn't, did not write any of the teachings that are ascribed to the Buddha. And that they were in fact written some period of time afterwards. And the scholars of these kind of teachings often get very exercised about, well, was it written by one person or many people? Who was the what translations, et cetera, et cetera. And so those are interesting things that some of you may be concerned about. I'm not a scholar. I'm a day-to-day practitioner of community-based Buddhism. And so what's really more interesting to me is how can we use this? And so I care less about who actually wrote it than in the teaching of the Buddha that we hand our teachings from warm hand to warm hand down through the generations. I'm interested in how it's useful and pertains to us. So I'm interested a bit in the history and the meaning, but I'm really much more impacted as I read it and discuss it with others and read commentaries about what this sutra has to offer us in terms of how we live on the Buddha's path and how we support each other on the Buddha's path. So Thich Nhat Hanh helped me in that book of his, and if you haven't read that, that's one good way to access the sutra. It's called Opening the Heart of the Cosmos, Insights to the Lotus Sutra, easily accessible. But what he says in that book is it almost as though, and I've had this experience with others of his readings, almost like he was writing it directly to me. He said, if you get caught up in the words, you will only see descriptions of miraculous events and supernatural powers, and we will not receive the true meaning of the Lotus Sutra. And so when I read that, as I said earlier, I found a bit of relief because I thought, oh, well, if Thich Nhat Hanh had to write a book about it to tell people to stop being so perplexed about the words and the repetitiveness and all that, then I'm not defective. It's that everybody feels that same way. Everybody gets lost in all that stuff. So I was relieved and curious, and I could come back to the reading of the Lotus Sutra with delight, that those fantastical stories and all of those flowers and stars and beings and creatures all had something to do with the Buddha's making several points for us about how we would live. And so just as I was starting to get comfortable with that, then later in Thich Nhat Hanh's book, he says, he encourages us not to miss the true meaning of the Lotus Sutra. So, you know, that there is a true meaning there, and it's very important that we do enough studying and enough reading of it to figure out what the true meaning is. And so I was back to square one. I had just gotten to the point where I was now appreciating all the colorfulness and all the words and the poetry. And here was Thich Nhat Hanh saying, okay, good, you got that. Now get back to work and figure out what this is about and how it will help you engage with Buddhist practice. So I thought, okay, so that's, you know, when I decided to become a priest, part of what I wanted to do was to be able to teach. And part of what I wanted to teach was to help people to experience the path of the Buddha that I had experienced or the path that it would be for them to experience, which would be sometimes the same and sometimes different. So I went back to the text and I thought, what can I find in the sutra that will be really useful? And I read a wonderful commentary that said, many commentaries that say the Lotus Sutra is sort of divided into two parts. And then Barbara O'Brien, who's a scholar who writes contemporary introductions to many of the sutras and teachings, says that it's really divided into two parts. two parts. And in the first part, we can focus on the chapter that's about skillful means. And in the second section, we can focus on the chapter that really talks about the infinite life of the Buddha. And so skillful means, as I mentioned, is traditionally how we teach so that others will have an opportunity to have access to the understanding and to the teaching that they might not. Most people would not go wander into the local bookstore or the library and take the Lotus Sutra off the shelf. So in teaching, we have an opportunity to say, you know what? This is beautiful to read and fun to read. And I maybe wish somebody had told me that when I first got a hold of it. But then someone can also say, and here's some things that will help you as you deal with your life and your life, that's your spiritual life, et cetera. So if you focus on those two chapters, there's a couple teachings that become very prominent in reading this book. So the first one is described in the Lotus Sutra as all vehicles are one vehicle. And so in traditional teachings, there were three vehicles for how to come to full awakening or to enlightenment. And the teachings were, these three vehicles said that folks will come to enlightenment by directly hearing the teachings of the Buddha, by realizing enlightenment for themselves through their own efforts. And the third vehicle was that the path of the Bodhisattva, which is what we do in Soto Zen, which is living for the benefit of all beings. So this was really interesting to me. So that all vehicles become one vehicle. And so what, if you read in the Lotus Sutra, the deep message is beautiful, which is that there is no such thing as three vehicles, the Buddha says. There's one vehicle. And that there are those components and many more. So people have many, many paths to get to the same gate. And so there's this opportunity for us to think about how we introduce people, how we set people, light the path for people, encourage people to move down the path. And so the Buddha says that these three vehicles are one vehicle, and this is the vehicle through which all beings, which is said over and over again in the sutra, all beings can become Buddha, all beings. And so there's lots of paths, and our job is not to try to identify the right one or the most important one or the one that's our lineage or the one that, you know, we think people should go along, maybe because we went on that path, but to really say lots of ways to have the experience of becoming Buddha, of being awakened. And we get to work with people to really figure out which way is best for them. And so that's a wonderful teaching in this particular sutra. The second thing, as I mentioned, that all beings may become Buddha. This is a major theme in the Lotus Sutra, and it's expressed many times. And part of the teaching, it says that the Buddha, who was at the Shakyamuni Buddha, who was living at that time, but he was in fact, he tells the people, always the Buddha and always will be, and that they are always the Buddha and always will be. So this seems to me a wonderful gift, especially in our community. The Buddha is saying that each of us has full Buddhahood. He did, and we all do. And that there's this, that for us, that's such a gift. And I think particularly in modern day LGBT communities, where some of us have been made to feel otherized, have made to feel broken or damaged, oppressed, hurt physically and spiritually. And for some, you know, we were born and supported in families that loved us properly from babyhood, nurtured us and held us not only safe, but considered us gifts to the family and the community. So whichever one of those two experiences we had, this teaching is telling us, we are all Buddhas. We all have complete access to Buddha nature. So if we think of it as the Buddha telling us that we are all, no one who does not have access to their Buddhahood, that we're all equal. No one is more or less than any others. Doesn't matter what vows you've taken, what your capacity is within the lineage that you happen to practice in, but that we all, have the power to be awakened. And then the third piece that's really important in the Lotus Sutra is called the importance of faith and devotion. And so, this is another wonderful one for those of us who don't have time to devote our whole life to living in the monastery or to pursuing degrees in Buddhist studies. because what this section of the Lotus Sutra tells us, and we're taught over and over again in the sutra, that Buddhahood cannot be attained through intellect alone. Indeed, the absolute teaching cannot be expressed in word or understood by ordinary cognition. So it's important to study. It's important that we have documents that we can look at that are historical and that have been passed down from the Buddha and the disciples, but that will never be enough according to the Lotus Sutra. The Lotus Sutra stresses the importance of action, of practice, of faith and devotion, as it's called, that Buddhahood, because of this, is more accessible to lay people who do not have the capacity or the ability to spend their lives in the monastery. So this idea that it's not just about writing or what's written, it's not just about teaching or what's taught, it's really about the practice. You know, the idea that we hear about in other places in Buddhism, the idea of having a cup of tea, which is the writings, or tasting the tea, actually drinking the tea. And so we're taught throughout this sutra and others that the most important thing here is that we have this opportunity to practice Buddhism, and that all of us can do that. And then not only can all of us do it, but the way we do it is by supporting each other and guiding each other and helping each other. So it's said that the Lotus Sutra is ultimately a teaching of empowerment. It teaches us that the inner determination of an individual can transform everything, gives us ultimate expression to the infinite potential and dignity inherent in each human life. And that comes from Jean Reeves, who wrote the most widely used English translation of the Lotus Sutra. So the Shakyamuni in the Lotus Sutra says that disciples and future followers can awaken this law in their own lives. They can awaken it. They don't need a teacher, although it's good to have. They don't need the sutras, although they're good to have. But the practice, it's really about the practice. And over again, the teachings and the parables and the beautiful stories and the poetry and the Lotus Sutra remind us that we're all in this together, and that's how we do this. So skillful means, as I mentioned, are two words that are used over and over and over again in this sutra. And I know that when I first heard them years ago, I sort of had a very naive understanding of what that meant. And I just thought skillful means was us applying our best effort, really doing it in a focused manner, whatever it was we were doing. Well, in the Lotus Sutra, it begins talking about skillful means specifically as teaching, the way we teach, the infinite variety of ways that teaching is done really is just a way of doing the following. What the sutra says is all of the ways of teaching, all of the methods of teaching, all of the parables have one purpose, leading all living beings to pursue the goal of becoming the Buddha, a goal that everyone without exception can reach. So the skillful means is really this wonderful opportunity that if we say, in this sutra and in our Buddhist practice, we know that there's this opportunity for each of us to have awakening every day, then it becomes something that's like, skillful means is how do we show that to others? You don't have to wait till you can sign up for a master's degree. You don't have to wait till you can go on a long retreat. You don't have to have the best teacher that Buddhism has to offer. All of those things are great, but you don't have to have that. So skillful means simply means how do we let people know that? How do we let people know that you have Buddha nature just exactly where you are? So the purpose of us teaching, according to the Lotus Sutra, the single cause for Buddhists, us appearing in the world, is to bring other suffering beings onto the path of awakening, and that only a Buddha together with a Buddha, one of the famous teachings, only a Buddha together with the Buddha, can know these teachings. And so it doesn't matter if I'm lucky enough to go off to an institution somewhere, a monastery, and study for 20 years. That's a great thing. It doesn't matter if I go to a workshop subsequently taught by that person. That also is a great thing. But what we hear over and over in the poetry of this sutra and the beauty of this sutra is that the message is really one of equality and justice. In Jean Reeves' book, he says that this is a really powerful sutra because it sort of went counter to the prevailing Indian ideas at that time of rank and status based purely on functions of birth. In our American society, many of us have had the experience personally and witnessed the experience that a lot of stuff that goes on in our country is still done purely as a function of birth and status. And as Buddhists, we're called in the sutra to do something about that. So the way that that's taught is that it's not enough. The Dharma that is offered to us here isn't just a Dharma of relieving suffering or eliminating suffering. That's important, but it's not just that. But there are some positive things in the sutra that are shared in the poetry, and they are the following. Buddha nature can be found in all people, that anyone can be a Dharma teacher. If you're walking the path, you have a capacity to teach someone else how you're doing that and how they can do it. That all beings, it says over and over again in the Lotus Sutra, are equally children of the Buddha. And that following the Bodhisattva path, which is to live for the benefit of all beings, is available to everyone, not just those who call themselves Bodhisattvas. And so the beautiful line from the Lotus Sutra that I really love is, the Dharma rains equally on all, nourishing each according to their needs. So all of this stuff is available to us, and sometimes we need it more than other times. And so we have this opportunity to become a Buddha, to experience enlightenment. And the teachings that are in this, in the Lotus Sutra, that really appeal to me is, there's an important set of the teachings that are about joy. The result of hearing and chanting the sutra is joy, says the sutra. And as we see in the sutra, when Shariputra realizes that he too is a bodhisattva on his way to becoming a Buddha. And there's a great many stories and lines about the joy that is expressed at that time. And then the final thing that I want to say is that a lot of what's in the sutra is about peace. It's not my intention, the Buddha says in the sutra, very specifically, to lead people to extinction, but to bring peace and comfort to all living beings. So the goal of peace, as found in the sutra, inspires us in two ways. One, to work for peace and justice as part of our bodhisattva practice, as part of being a Buddha, and partially because it gives us strength to share our practice. You know, if we believe that the sutra relieves suffering, but that's not enough, that it also brings joy and brings peace and encourages us to work on justice, then we can really work together as people on the Buddha's path, as Buddhists, to transform the world. And the beauty in the Lotus Sutra, the poetry and the images and the parables are many things. But at the end, what they say is that this world is in need of some transformation. And the 18 people looking at me right now are the folks that are going to do it. That's how we will transform the world. And so, you know, that's true always. And certainly during this season in 2020, it's really vitally important. But as I say, if you haven't looked at the Lotus Sutra in a while, you don't have to do a deep study. Just pick it up and read some of it, because there's some really beautiful stuff in there. So, thank you.
Stephen, thank you.